Well, this is Jim Fetzer, host of The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio, Studio B Live. This 28th day of October, we have much to report, and I'm very delighted to have as my featured guest today, Leila Paul, who's been in the news business forever, from Palestine, knows the history of the nation inside and out, to offer her expert commentary and thoughts about the situation we're in today. We begin with a report from Information Liberation. Israel strikes Iranian military sites. Tehran says air defense successfully countered the attack. Israel conducted airstrikes on various military sites in Iran Saturday, but allegedly only inflicted limited damage due to Iran's air defense system. From Reuters, Israel struck military sites in Iran early Saturday, but its retaliation did not appear aimed at the country's most sensitive oil or nuclear targets after urgent calls from allies and neighbors for restraint. The risk of wider conflagration between heavily armed Israel and Iran has convulsed a region already on fire with warfare in Gaza and Lebanon. But it was unclear whether the overnight strikes would trigger further escalation. Israel's military sent scores of jets and completed three waves of strikes before dawn against missile factories and other sites, warned its heavily armed arch foe not to hit back. Iran said its air defenses had successfully countered the attack, but two soldiers had been killed. Some locations had suffered limited damage. A semi-official Iranian news site vowed a proportional reaction to the Israeli strikes. Press TV confirmed two soldiers killed and that their air defenses had successfully intercepted and countered the acts of aggression. And they published photographs and memorials to the two who were killed. Despite previous warnings by officials of the Islamic Republic to the criminal and illegal Zionist regime to avoid any adventurous action, this fake regime attacked parts of military centers in a province of Tehran, Khuzestan, and Ilam this morning in a tension-causing action from Press TV. Iran's official IRNA news agency cited a security source saying some of the sounds heard in the capital were caused by defense activity in Tehran. The agency said there were no reports of incidents requiring assistance at the situation at Mehrabad International Airport, and the Imam Khomeini International Airport was normal. IRNA said Iranian air defenses had successfully shot down adversarial targets in the airspace. Footage shared online captured what appeared to be interception. Here we have one. Watch our defense system engage and shoot down multiple hostile projectiles over Tehran. Another. Israeli strikes on Iran apparently failed to cause any significant damage, but Israeli propaganda is desperate to sell the attack as a huge success. This pathetic display is how they're trying to save face after getting wrecked in Lebanon this week. Here's the headline from the Jerusalem Post. Historic humiliation. Israel precision strike leave Iran defenseless. Iranian reporter in Tehran interviewed some people in the morning and asked them, they say Israel attacked Iran. Aren't you scared? Yeah, you came outside to work. One of them replied, scared, laughs. No. Israel, for whatever reason, released a Photoshop picture of Yoav Gallant in the war room with a blurred out monitor showing an old image from 2021 of an oil refinery fire in Tehran. That certainly suggests they were unsuccessful. Pictures broadcast by Israel Channel 12 similarly were old photos from 3 years ago and unrelated to what's happening now. If this is the full extent of the attack, it's a win for America and Iran and a loss for Israel, under their own policy of escalation dominance. That said, Israel may simply not want to blow up the war ahead of the presidential election, may believe that if Trump wins, he'll give them more leeway and military support in a full-scale war with Iran. It's also possible Israel is simply afraid Iran will make good their threat to respond by a disproportionate counterattack destroying Israel's gas fields and power plants all at once. We have here Scott Ritter talking about the attack and its family.
The whole of the Western.
For some reason, let's see. Let me try this again.
Are you able to get Alistair Crook, Jim, on Judging Freedom? Sorry.
Layla, that was super because my video of Scott reporting about failure is not playing. Go right ahead.
Well, I wonder why. You want me to play Alistair Crook?
That would be wonderful. Yes, yes.
The defense concept on the fact, I mean, what we're saying in the end is, you know, that at the end of the day, Iran has an effective air defense system. Israel does not. And that has big implications for the whole region. It has been big implications because also, you know, there is in the background, this huge competition, you know, Russian technical competence on the battlefield versus NATO's technical competence. And everyone presumed that, you know, Israel, as little America, therefore had the ability to go and bomb Iran. Well, it was aborted, and they fired a few long-range missiles from 70 to 100 kilometers, but there's no way those missiles would be accurate because they rely on old GPS. They are sort of pre-configured with old GPS, and then they have to get, you know, new, if you like, at the end, they have to have, if you like, new data provided to meet that, to get their target. Otherwise, you're just firing them blindly. And it seems that's what more or less has happened. They sort of fired blindly because they loaded up with these missiles. They couldn't get onto it. They met this unexpected air defense system around Tehran, and they called it all off. 2 and 3, the big bombing didn't take place. So the damage was minimal. You know, the Israelis, though, have to go to the victory.
Right.
They couldn't say otherwise.
Let's go over to Lebanon. Did the IDF suffer serious casualties in the past 4 or 5 days in South Lebanon?
Huge. One Hebrew language newspaper has said, you know, the amount of death and injuries that we've suffered in Lebanon in this period is a catastrophe. Quote, that's the direct word that they used in the press. They said it was a catastrophe. They've also said that the Golani Brigade has been really effectively disabled, decimated. You remember that was the elite unit, the Golanis, that first of all had a drone that came in and killed a small number, and injured many more Golani soldiers in their base just south of Haifa. And now in Lebanon, they seem to have suffered huge losses. And they've now talked about the IDF have now proposed a 2-week brief ceasefire. They're going to stop attacking in Lebanon. But Hezbollah have responded by saying, okay, but now you have to evacuate 20 settlements in the north because these are being used by Israeli troops as staging grounds and, if you like, meeting places before they incurs into Lebanon, and we're now going to attack those. So we advise all you civilians to leave, and they are. Lots of them are leaving. It's a really, really difficult situation for Israel, and there are not just General Brick, but there are also other generals saying we have to find a settlement. I mean, of course, they can't come out and say because, you know, the whole strategy versus Iran is coming undone. If we can't hit Iran and we can't suppress its air defenses, then, you know, the only way we could attack Iran is nuclear. And that would mean probably a nuclear war. So this is really very, I mean, this is an inflection point, because so much was hanging on the idea that, you know, Iran could be easily removed. And that would, in a sense, the way the Israelis were looking at it was, you know, we'd solve Gaza, the south, by attacking the north. And we'd attack, solve the north by attacking Iran. None of those is already working. It is a strategy.
Layla, that's simply excellent. Yes, give me your thoughts. Give me your commentary on what's happened here.
Well, I think this is a humiliation for Israel, but it's actually an accurate presentation. Without the U.S. right there doing everything for them, as their slaves are supposed to do, they can't do anything for themselves. That was one of the things that Jews always resented when they were in Europe. The Europeans looked down upon them for being inefficient. The only thing they could do was cheat, lie, sneak, and steal money through various means until they had bribed and controlled everybody who had any money or wanted any of the money they had stolen, so that they could dominate the decision makers of each country. And that is particularly true of the U.S., which is now occupied territory. So with Israel pretty well disabled, and Blinken, the guy who's been calling the shots for the cadaver Biden, they're pretty well helpless. So Trump is going to come in, very likely, and hopefully he will bring around him good military and political leaders with huge depth of knowledge and compassion and intelligence. Someone like Douglas MacGregor, as well as Scott Ritter, and people like that, people who know what the Russian interest really is, which is to maintain peace and to avoid the destruction of the planet. Because Israel now under Netanyahu represents the idea, the image of the idiot guy who could not get the woman he wanted. And he puts a gun to her head and says, if I can't have you, nobody will. So that's pretty well what they're saying to the world. If we can't dominate you, then you simply will cease to exist.
Now, you may be as relieved as I was relieved when J.D. Vance stated our interest is in not going to war with Iran. This is from Information Liberation. He went on to say that the Israelis and Arab states should police Iran with funding from America under the Abraham Accords, a Trump administration program to bribe Arab kings with billions of taxpayer dollars to normalize relations with Iran. Vance's rhetoric on Iran has clearly changed markedly from July. Here we have, back in July, Trump VP picked J.D. Vance. A lot of people recognize we need to do something with Iran, but not these weak little bombing runs. If you're going to punch the Iranians, you punch them hard. That had bothered me at the time. Now here we have from Trump. We have never been closer to World War III than we are right now under Comrade Kamala Harris. Israel has just bombed Tehran, killing innocent lives. Kamala is nowhere to be found. I will have this war solved as president-elect. Trump this week secured the endorsement of a group of Muslim leaders in Michigan, who are angry over Biden and Harris's unconditional support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a tweet, breaking. Members of the Arab and Muslim community in Michigan just got on stage at the Trump rally to publicly endorse him. Trump was already going to win Michigan, but Arab voters will make it a landslide. We as Muslims stand with President Trump because he promises peace, not war. I'd love your comments on that, Layla, before we turn to the BRICS summit, which is very, very significant and ominous for the future of the American dollar and economy. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Trump is saying the right things, and I believe that this time he will have the people around him to help him actually get his orders obeyed. According to Colonel McGregor, the last time Trump was in office, when he gave orders, what he did not realize is that those who were tasked, obligated by the Constitution to obey his orders to avoid confrontations, they disobeyed him. People like that creep Bolton and others like him and Pompeo, all of those betrayed Trump, who wanted to actually avoid any kind of confrontation. What Trump was saying was valid. The problem is the criminals beneath him were not obeying his orders. They need to be prosecuted. As for BRICS, I'd love to hear what you have to say, because I think it still represents an opportunity, not necessarily a risk or a liability to us. We can still, if Trump is able, and the people around Trump who will obey his orders will talk to the to Putin about BRICS and other people at BRICS, because now there are a number of permanent members who have to approve any alliances or agreements or admission of membership to BRICS. There's no reason we have to keep using the U.S. dollar. First of all, it's going to be decades before a new currency can be introduced to all of the BRICS members. Everybody is going to have to use their own currency for a while. Eventually, digital currency will be the currency of the future. I think those who have gone to the digital currency now may be prepared early, or they may be prepared too early, such as Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, who, by the way, is the grandson of Palestinians, although he tries to hide it sometimes. But when he goes to Israel and kisses the wall and the Western Wall to please Netanyahu so he can be included in the Netanyahu. Well, now everybody who got down and kissed the feet of Netanyahu, you're in trouble, because BRICS is there. And at the top of BRICS is a man with great insight, great humanity, deep intellect, and an understanding not only of the past, but the capabilities of the future of malicious actors within the globe. We have Vladimir Putin to thank for everything. And all those who are like-minded, all of those from what they call the Global South. And I want first and foremost say thank you to South Africa for bringing to the attention of the world at the International Court of Justice the horrendous crimes that were committed by Israel and all of those, that idiot ambassador to the UN, Israeli ambassador, who made a fool of himself and his country, in fact, demeaned the whole UN. But that, and that was in the early days before the true atrocities had been committed, the burning alive of children who are hooked up to survival. I can't even, when I visualize in my mind the bodies of young children burning as they screamed, and the Israelis who had dropped U.S. bombs on them standing by gleefully watching, that kind of sadism must be eradicated from this planet. The people like that need to be locked up in straitjackets. Yes. out of the way of being able to commit and degrade the minds and the souls of those good people on this planet. Unfortunately, as you know, I'm here in Canada. We are in danger of having a malicious man, Pierre Poilievre, who has said that he's going to promote Israel in the UN, Israel's malicious, deadly agenda. That man is dangerous to the country and to the world. And any of his candidates is going to be of like mind. So one thing we have to realize, that once a Western nation, especially the Anglosphere, goes along with the now defunct Netanyahu plans, is going to bring their country down to the lowest possible level. Jim?
Well, Leila, I am tremendously relieved to hear Vance speaking in such a moderate fashion because some of Trump's rhetoric has been off the wall and problematic for me. But this sounds very reasoned, and I certainly hope and do believe he will have better allies surrounding him in office, certainly bringing RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard into the mix is a tremendously promising sign. I think the world of them both. They're here in Wisconsin. In fact, they're going to be at the Reliance Center tomorrow night, and I intend to be there to hopefully have the opportunity to greet them and extend my support. And your critique, of course, of Israel and its devious, vicious, sadistic ways is very well founded. And I think the whole world has caught on to it. Turning to BRICS, summit highlights twilight of U.S. hegemony marks the official launch of a multipolar world order. Thursday marked the fourth and final day of the 16th summit of the BRICS bloc, held this year in Kazan, Russia. Packed with dozens of high-level meetings and bilateral talks summarized in a 134-point joint declaration. The summit also had plenty of symbolic meaning, which observers unpacked for Sputnik. The BRICS summit in Kazan is undoubtedly one of the most important global political and diplomatic events of the year, as it brought together the leaders of the expanded BRICS family for the first time. Professor Alexis Hebiyeremiah, a senior researcher with DSINRF, South African Research Chair in Industrial Development University in Johannesburg, told Sputnik, summarizing the summit's results as the long-anticipated event reached its final day. The whooping has now become the global growth engine, and its economic muscle is by any measure stronger than that of the old hegemonic grouping. One could say it's the official launch of the multilateral world order, the twilight of U.S. hegemony. The Kazan Declaration, published Wednesday, featuring 134 provisions aimed at creating a more just and democratic world order, enhancing cooperation for global and regional stability and security, fostering economic and financial cooperation, and strengthening people-to-people exchanges for social and economic development. Specific provisions include consensus among bloc members on the need for reform of the Bretton Woods system and of the United Nations, further expansion of the use of national currencies in trade, commitment to strengthen cooperation in high tech and medicine, agreement to continue talks on the ambitious BRICS, clear cross-border settlement and depository system, support for the Russian proposed BRICS grain exchange platform in an array of proclamations related to international emergency, from the conflicts in Ukraine and the Middle East to crises in South Sudan, Haiti, and Afghanistan. The most important outcomes are not simply the initiatives contained in the declaration, but above all, the strategic alignment of such a diverse group and the gleam of the power it radiates by attracting new candidates such as Turkey. Given the strategic role of Turkey in the old hegemonic order, the presence of its leader at the summit reflects a measure of BRICS' future in leading global affairs. Referencing Turkey's President Recep Erdogan's attendance at the bloc's BRICS Outreach Plus platform meeting on Thursday, alongside nearly three dozen other leaders and senior officials. Layla, your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that I was disappointed with Erdogan. He was mouthing off from the very beginning that he was going to defend the people that were under assault. But instead, he was supplying from Azerbaijan. He was getting oil and other products and supplying them to Israel. They were using the RAF air base at Akrotiri in Greece to send off, it wasn't just the Turks, but others as well, especially Britain, was supplying Israel with all kinds of weaponry while Turkey was supplying them with food supplies as well as oil from Azerbaijan, of all places, where they had recently massacred the Armenians in what they call Artsakh, but what everyone else called Nagorno-Karabakh. That's the second time Turkey has caused misery to the Armenians, and they refuse to acknowledge their act in the genocide of the Armenians in 1915, while the Kurds who committed the atrocities have apologized, or at least some of them. So I don't have a lot of faith in Erdogan.
We'll be right back with Leila Paul. I'm delighted to be joined today by Leila Paul. Perhaps the only point you were making about BRICS, with which I tend to disagree, is moving to cyber or digital currency, Leila. I think that's the path to slavery, because governments, through the control of digital currency, can manipulate your behavior by cutting you off if you engage in any behavior that they do not approve.
From what I've heard, is they're talking about digital currency outside of banks, eliminating the banks from having the control, because the banks obviously are working to control the governments. So once you take the digital, and how it's going to be worked out has not yet been described, but it's a couple of decades away, and everybody can monitor what's happening with their nation's currency. It must be in the hands of the people. That's one of the things about digital currency. Yes, any currency, once it's in the control of a small elite, like we've had with the Rothschilds controlling the banking and all of the Warburgs, the Kuhn loans, and all those others who came over from Germany and from Russia when the Rothschilds sent them over, Jacob Schiff being the primary one who brought 20 million way back or more than that into the U.S. in order to set things up in the U.S. for the Zionists to control it. And again, I want to stress that a lot of Jews have been finally given the opportunity with YouTube to say Zionism is not Judaism. Zionism is a political, military, megalomaniac movement. It is a killing concept, whereas Judaism in its earliest form was a form of pure belief in God and in the humanity, the children of God, all humans being children of God. That was what I remember when I once asked my grandmother, "You lost the most of all of us when we left Palestine, when we left Bethlehem." As Christians, we never abandoned our Christian faith. And my grandmother said, "No, no, no, Yashatra," something she used to call me. "You must never, we are all children of God. Do not hate them. Do not hate anyone." Now, unfortunately, I did follow her for a long time, and I was duped by some Jews. I will admit that. Yeah. They pretended to be peace-loving, but they were actually Zionists. And I want to offer an apology to Gabor Mate. I had criticized him for viciously, verbally criticizing me for sitting with a bunch of Jews at a secular Passover, and he exploded at me, "How could you sit with these people?" And then he burst out of the room. What I did not realize is what was happening to the Palestinians. I was in New Orleans. I was in Vancouver. How could I possibly have known what was going on there? When I was in Israel, I was under the guidance of Ruth Dayan, who was working for peace, the first wife of Moshe Dayan. She condemned Moshe Dayan for betraying those Arabs he pretended to be friends with. Go ahead, sorry. I just wanted to finish that thought.
Returning to Sputnik's report about BRICS, the de-dollarization is absolutely central, where serious work remains to be done, according to the professor. I think the essential dilemma is that many of the BRICS, South Africa, India, Brazil, have financial sectors that are tied to the dollar in a way that obviously Russia and Iran no longer are, because of sanctions. and new members, including Saudi Arabia, potentially the UAE and Egypt, which are also very tied to the United States. De-dollarization is critical, Dr. Bond believes, emphasizing that as things are, the Federal Reserve prints money and then raises the interest rate and creates havoc in both cases across the world. I would attribute a great deal of the inequality globally to the U.S. Fed's loose money, its bailouts of its own banks. So we really need to see something different, with which I would add I completely agree. Another question relates to BRICS. Go ahead, Layla. Sure.
Yes, I think you're right. The de-dollarization is necessary because right now it's in the hands of the so-called royal families in the Arab world. They have deprived their people to the point of keeping them repressed, oppressed, and even imprisoned in ghettos while they bring in workers from other countries to make sure that their people who might rebel against them do not ever have any money at their disposal. Taking the dollar out of the hands of those corrupt royal families will perhaps, hopefully with digital currency or some other form of currency, it can be distributed amongst the people where they can live normal human lives and not be debased as they and sold out to the Israelis because the MBS was ready to sign off. That's one of the reasons for the impetus for the Hamas rebellion, because they were trying to release. And let's remember, these are not prisoners. The tens of thousands that the Israelis have held in their so-called prisons, their torture chambers, are hostages that have been there for decades, some of them. But Houthi has been there for I don't know how many years. Yahya Sinwar, who is now a hero, an icon for all repressed peoples, was held for 20 years in Israeli prisons, where he used the time to learn Hebrew and to learn their strategies and how they function. So what they have done is keep hostages for decades. They never went through they never even had charges laid against them. They would just kidnap them, rape them to the point of death and torture. And so when Hamas on October 7th broke through, it was after decades of events similar to where the Israelis would come in, bomb them, kill them, torture them, kidnap them, and rape them and abuse them. And by the way, I know for a fact this has been happening since the 1960s because I was involved in a document to be presented to the UN in 1971. I was involved as the typist writing up the presentation that was being made and collating it. And what I read absolutely horrified me. I also typed up a number of other manuscripts on the tactics that they've used. The abuse, the torture, the rapes, the way they would force them not to threaten their lives, but to threaten the lives of their families, their daughters, their wives, their children, their sons. They would threaten them. And so they've been doing that since long before the 60s. If I was typing it up in 1971, you know what's been going on for decades, since the very beginning, of the creation of this false, they never lived up to the contract with the UN. It's not up to Israel to grant permission for a Palestinian state. It was written in to the standards on which they were admitted to the UN. They had to. They were to exist as a unitary nation, two separate nations working together, each with sovereignty over their airspace and their land and their ports of entry and exit.
Layla, your passion and intensity, it's sometimes difficult to follow all of your thoughts, which are excellent and highly appropriate. But we have plenty of time today, and I just want you to relax. I'm just super pleased to have you here. Another question Sputnik reports relates to BRICS consensus on reforming the Western-led international institutions. Bond expressing concern that continuing to lie upon the WTO, the IMF, the World Bank, and the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change may mean we still have excessive interconnection with the Western-dominated order, inferring the need for something fundamentally new. The same goes for BRICS' new development bank, which is still lending in dollars thanks to difficulties in finding consensus to the contingent reserve arrangement as an alternative to the IMF. And I'm sure you would agree, Leila, that getting out of the World Trade Organization, the IMF, ultimately that Bank of International Settlements, is going to be indispensable to the success of BRICS. Serious work remains to be done on de-dollarization, which is critical. Meanwhile, ultimately, what makes a BRICS bloc, Kazan summit, and the need for dialogue so important now is a particular juncture in the economic world whereby emerging economies produce more than the previous hegemons, but are confronted with constant threats of conflict, as the West does not wish to go down without a fight. Dialogue is important to avoid the chaos the West wants to inflict on the global community just to stay on top. It's through dialogue that the unstoppable transition from the old to the new world order can be achieved without destroying the precious lives of multiple communities. I just like to add, Leila, that it seems to me the West brought this upon itself, especially America, that the sanctions that were imposed upon Russia were so severe and disrupting to ordinary commercial transactions that other nations saw the political agenda influencing ordinary financial transactions, which meant they were going to be subject to manipulation, harassment, and control by the United States if they did not withdraw from those arrangements that heretofore had rather served the world rather well and kept, of course, the dollar propped up as the medium for financial exchange throughout the world. But that is gone, never to return. And I believe, Leila, this marks the emancipation of the world from the dollar hegemony. Your thoughts?
I agree with you completely. The only thing is, between now and then, everybody must be vigilant that their interest in terms of the currency that they want to use is actually implemented. Now, one thing I do like is that Putin has acknowledged they have a bunch of rupees, which is their currency, that they have to get rid of. So they are going to, they have to decide what they're going to do. Likewise, every other country involved has to decide what currency they want to use, at least in the short term. Ultimately, in the long term, they're, for logic, since we are now a global economy, we are going to have to find some kind of currency that is suitable for each country, that is going to represent the actual value of the products that will be exchanged for that currency. And that's going to take greater minds with a lot more knowledge than an ordinary person like myself would have. But I do like the fact that someone who was at the head of this, someone who spent 16 years, imagine the work he's gone through, Vladimir Putin, 16 years of trying to unify the globe on the basis of peace and fairness. This, and it's not a temporary aberration or a pretense, it's obviously real, because it has attracted very intelligent, brilliant men. Unfortunately, they're all men at the table that I saw, the majority were. They've been able to come together in the name of peace or in the fear of being excluded, because they recognize that this is going to be the new world order that we started hearing about from Bush, Papa Bush Sr., the new world, only it's not the world order they had planned. It's going to be a more equitable world order within the imaginations of people like Vladimir Putin and those who are similar to him in thinking. And I include amongst those all of the recent leaders of Iran. What they don't, what people don't understand about Iran is that they have a tripart system of government, where there is a religious group, and then there is a secular group, and they're in the, what they call the guardian angels that mediate when they cannot arrive at an agreement. That's why the killing of their presidents was meaningless, because they have a constitution that sets out who the level of succession, the procedure of succession, if one of their leaders is killed. There wasn't even a blip in the murder of their presidents. The only thing that was the humiliation was, in that culture, when you have a guest in your home, to have them murder the way the Israelis murdered Ismail Haniyeh, that was a shame, a disgrace on them. And yet they refrained from retaliation for fear that Israel would find the excuse it wants to start a nuclear war. Somehow, Netanyahu and his gang have been bent, actually, from the very beginning. Vanunu, many years ago, in the 50s, revealed that Israel had a nuclear plant in Dimona in the Negev, and he was imprisoned. Once they kidnapped him, tricked him into being kidnapped, they imprisoned him and tortured him because he dared to reveal the truth. But everybody pretty well knew it. And where did they get the technology? From the U.S. The Israeli spies in all the major U.S. institutions stole all of the technology that the U.S. had. Or maybe it was handed to them by people like Blinken and all the Israelis that are actually serving Israel while being a dual citizens and weaseling their way like termites into the woodwork and into the structures of the U.S. governmental institutions. They managed to pass on to their spies all the information they wanted to send to Israel so that it would not only have the information, but have the Damocles sword that it would be able to hold over the heads of all the U.S. leaders. You do as we say or else. You will not be reelected. We will finance the campaigns of your competitors, or we will kill you, or we will expose this deep, dark secret that we had honey-trapped you into, or you are whatever was disgraceful at the time. They have been doing that from the very beginning. So, yes, the threat now, I think, has been removed. Once you uncover what a crime is in progress, it's very hard to proceed. However, being as ingenuity that they have with regard to evil and sinister, nefarious plots, do not count them out yet. Any dual citizen, any Israeli, whether he holds the passport and acknowledges it, anyone who is working for Israel, beware, because they're always recruiting people from the other side. They're always instigating and infiltrating and then weaseling their way in to get their plans instituted, whether or not it's obvious and is only amongst an elite. And this is where I admire someone like Colonel Douglas McGregor, because he has said he would gladly participate in a Trump administration because he knows. He's so remarkably knowledgeable, as are so many of the others. I mean, Scott Ritter, who was an international weapons inspector, who told them all along Iraq did not have any weapons of mass destruction. It was just a lie, an excuse to incriminate Americans in the murder of innocent people in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, with, by the way, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia were working together to kill the Yemenis, and they killed thousands of children with cholera. So I hope the existing Saudis are ejected and punished by their people as they should be. But they are not alone. The UAE, all of those so-called royal families who appointed themselves royal because they went along with the oil companies and the U.S. government. Sorry, Jim. Before, go ahead. You're right. You're right. I'm passionate.
Before turning to domestic politics, I'd just like to add, it doesn't seem to me BRICS needs a common currency. You know, I mean, that's a part of the new world order, to create a uniform currency, especially a digital currency that'll give control over the whole population of the world. I felt it was a huge mistake when the European Union was created and they went to euros. And of course, what's going on now in the U.S. is something like implementing a North American Union without acknowledging it to the public, as though we had no borders of any consequence. But the effects have been traumatic, devastating, and only beginning to surface in terms of the kinds of crime, the demands on our financial system. It's a combination of the, you know, flooding America, just as Europe was flooded with North African migrants, flooding the United States, combined with the Cloud-Priven plan to overwhelm a welfare state with illegals. I mean, economists have known forever, you cannot combine a welfare state with open borders. And yet that's what we've done under this Biden-Harris administration. Can you imagine how much damage has happened to the United States since Trump left office, Leila? To me, it just staggers the imagination.
Never mind the United States. It happened here in Canada long before it happened in the United States. There was an open area called the Roxham Road between either New York or Vermont and the province of Quebec, where the RCMP and the border guards were acting like hotel porters. They'd go over and carry over the luggage and the children of all the illegal migrants. And theoretically, you can only seek asylum in the U.S. as a refugee if you come from a country where you're in danger. Well, excuse me, if they're coming from the U.S., theoretically, they're not in danger. But it was part of the North American Union that was started secretly by Stephen Harper, then the Prime Minister of Canada, as well as Vicente Fox, the President of Mexico, and of course, George Bush, the younger. But he was only fulfilling his father's plans, their gang, the skull and bones, whatever you want to call them. They were doing things without, never mind violating the Constitution, they violated every principle of a free and democratic society. There has been no democracy. So this lamenting or hand-twisting over, oh, gee, they're not obeying the Constitution. Well, guess what? From the very first opportunity, nobody obeys their government governing documents that are supposed to guarantee equality and freedom for all. Judiciaries have been rigged for the wealthy to defeat someone with a justifiable complaint. We've lost all the things. Our educational systems have become indoctrinations of perversion. We've lost the value that made us once a great nation. And you know, Jim, you make an excellent point. There is no need for a unitary digital currency. Everybody has to agree on a currency that makes their nation safe from being overwhelmed by other nations. You're absolutely right. I had not stopped to think about human nature and the fact that even the most, those who appear corrupt and say, I've always helped people. I spent my, as candidates will say, when they've done nothing but service themselves, I always help people. So please elect me, elect me. If there's anyone that is seeking a political office without tangible proof of unbiased work for the common people, then you must not elect people like that. They are going to betray you just as they betray their own people. I have one person in particular in mind in my riding in London West. There is a candidate for the Conservatives that is an utterly corrupt person. If he is elected, well, we already know because Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservative Party, has said that he's going to do everything he can in the UN or other institutions to serve Israel, because he imagines that the Israel of last week or last month or last year is still in power. Not so. There was once an Israel where the original founding fathers had grown old enough with Arab-speaking neighbors and friends that they realized they really could live together in peace and harmony and prosperity, because both sides have very similar ways of thinking, having lived side by side for almost 100 years, that they could work together. But instead, the Netanyahu gang took over, got rid of Netanyahu. Rabin's wife blames Netanyahu for his murder because he wanted to get rid of all the people who wanted peace. As I said, Ruth Diane, who sought me out when in Vancouver, we met for lunch, and she told me a whole bunch of things about how corrupt Moshe Dayan had been, even to the point where he was stealing Canaanite artifacts and claiming it was Israeli and selling it on the black market. And that's what happened in Iraq. One of the reasons that the corporations and the rich people wanted to invade Iraq was because they wanted to steal the valuable ancient cultural artifacts that belong to the history of humanity. The town, in fact, that might have been the place where the founders of Bethlehem, of my hometown, the founders of that may have come from a place called Tel El Lehem. And that was only about 26 miles southeast of Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham reportedly migrated to, up to Haran, which was an Aramean location, and then down back to Canaan. So it just, the corruption, I have seen the Old Testament rewritten and revised a number of times. Do you know the Old Testament actually called Cyrus the Great, the Achaemenid? They called him the Messiah. He was the one, it was in the Old Testament. You won't find it today because every time they reprint it, they rewrite it to meet their needs. And Abraham the wandering Aramean became Abraham the wandering Jew when Judaism did not exist, when Judah was not yet a land, Yehuda, because that's what it was. As you know, there's no J in Aramaic or in Chaldean. Anyway.
Take a deep breath, Layla. We'll be right back after this break and turn to domestic politics. Here we have what may be the definitive story of this election. Democrat vote counters admit they don't have enough fake ballots to win in 2024. The Democrats have been shocked by the effectiveness of the Republican ground game so far in early voting this year. Republican voters are banking their votes early at a margin of 2-1 in many of the 16 states where early voting has already begun. The two main parties in charge of the Democrats' fraud machine are now both expressing worry about Kamala's performance to steal the 2024 election. They needed a candidate this year who could come plausibly close to tying Donald Trump. That's turning out not to be Kamala. We've been covering this for a while, but if you're unfamiliar with the inner working of the Democrat fraud machine, Barack Obama oversees a ballot harvesting operation. Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina oversees the vote counting network in the swing states. If you look at any ballot counting room in a swing state, whether it's State Farm Arena in Fulton County, Georgia, or the TCF Center in downtown Detroit, Michigan, you'll find members of the African Methodist Episcopal Church affiliated with Clyburn doing the counting. The 2020 election was not stolen by a zillion votes for Biden, but rather by thousands of votes in a handful of swing counties. There aren't enough fake ballots floating around out there for those same counties to do all the heavy lifting in 2024. There just aren't. There still has to be a person's name attached to every phantom ballot, living or dead. But there just aren't enough to pull the job off again this year. Clyburn and Obama are now breaking out in a flop sweat over this. Clyburn has expressed his worry in a couple of appearances on CNN now. In one of those, he followed Obama's example and warned black men to stop being so sexist and vote for Kamala. In the second, he admitted Kamala needs to get out and do more town hall style events rather than additional one-on-one interviews. This was after the Bret Baier train wreck on Fox. Kamala is obviously too dumb, too unprepared, too lazy to handle one-on-one interviews. She looks exhausted this week. Honestly, she looks like hell. The campaign schedule is wearing her out. Meanwhile, Trump worked the shift at McDonald's one day, sat down for another epic podcast, went on to an NFL game that evening, all in one day. Obama also lectured black men about how sexist they were being. Based on the responses on social media, that didn't go over well. After all these years, it still hasn't sunk in with the Democrats that America elected Trump in 2016 as a repudiation of Obama and his policies. These are the two figures most responsible for the 2020 election being stolen, and they're both worried about Kamala's lackluster campaign. It doesn't matter how many fabricated votes they have loaded and ready to go on election day and the days after. If people don't turn out to actually vote for her, the math just doesn't work. The 2024 election is being watched too closely by too many for them to pull off a similar steal. It also threw a wrench into things when RFK Jr. dropped out in swing states and endorsed Trump. The DNC's response to that didn't make sense at first. They were suing to kick Kennedy off the ballot in some states, while suing to keep him on the ballot in others. It makes sense, though, when you realize they had already pre-printed ballots with Kennedy's name on them in some states. Scanners can't read a ballot correctly if it has the wrong number of candidates on it. They need Kennedy's name to stay on the ballot in some swing states, and they need him out in others. It's all about the ballots. Obama's worried, Clyburn's worried, DNC is worried. Republican voters are outpacing Democrats by almost 2-1 in early voting. That's where we stand, with just 2 weeks to go before Election Day. And AI reveals what may have been said during a tense exchange between Barack Obama and President Biden. Former President Obama and President Biden were seen having a heated discussion recently. Nobody knows exactly what they said. AI experts have made a very probable lip reading about what they might have said to one another. The video starts out with Biden asking if Democrat nominee Harris is doing okay since elite Democrats like Obama installed her as Biden's replacement. Obama then answered by saying, "Nope, she's down, Joe." Then he adds, "I think they found out that Kamala is retarded." Now we're getting basically, yeah, Trump is killing us in the polls. So yeah, we're going to lose, Joe, Obama continues. Then Biden suggests he could save the day by returning as a Democratic nominee. And Obama shuts him down, telling him he might be the only one more retarded than Kamala. The hilarious AI voiceover is obviously fake, but not might be too far off from the real conversation they're having behind closed doors these days. They replaced Biden with Harris when it became obvious Trump was going to crush him in a fair contest. But now Kamala's proven herself just as bad a candidate. So Democrats know things are not looking great in 2 weeks. Yeah. So the question becomes, maybe it'll play this time.
So is Kamala doing okay?
Nope. She's down, Joe. I think they found out that she's retarded. Now we're basically fucked. Trump is killing us at the polls. So, yes, we're going to lose Joe.
Damn it. Wait. What if I come back to run again?
As candidate?
Yeah.
Well, let me put it this way, Joe. The only person in this world who is even more retarded than Kamala Harris is basically you. So, no,
come
Joe.
On, man.
You're
just
not going back yet.
Shot.
Let's let it all play out. Okay, let's just, we'll talk later, Joe.
Okay.
Women looking fine up in here.
So,
Layla, isn't that a marvel? Your thoughts?
I find that highly entertaining. But the other thing that is comforting is that the public now is so well aware of the efforts of what has been a long going, long ongoing activity of rigging the elections and controlling voter ballots. They know now they're not going to allow it to happen. They will not accept it. And they cannot risk having a huge electorate that is aware objecting. I'm not suggesting they would do anything more than object verbally, but there are ways that they can object verbally, maybe even if the judiciary is cleaned up. But it won't be necessary. I don't think they're going to be able to get away with it. One of the reasons is, as you mentioned, the machinery or equipment cannot read a ballot that is incorrectly programmed with three names when it should be only two. So it probably will be as close as it has occurred in our lifetimes of a legitimate election. As long as they've been using machines, it's always been vulnerable. These computers have always been easy to rig. We know that you can pre-program a computer to give you the results that you want. That's nothing new. So from the start, they should have recognized that. But America was, when I lived in the U.S., it was a wonderful experience. I attended junior high in Miami. I loved it. It was great. Some of the best teachers I've had. I've had a half dozen good teachers in my life, and three of them were located at Shenandoah Junior High in Miami. They were wonderful teachers. I loved the life that was there. I enjoyed being a part of the sense of honesty and honorability. It was also when a lot of the Cubans were coming over in 61. So I know they entered our class, but were able to keep up quite well because many of them came from Spain originally, from the war with Franco. But even then, we've always been a global, politically a global economy. What happens in one country affects others. You have migrants. But this time, the migrant, one thing that Colonel Douglas McGregor said that really struck a note with me was that you need homogeneity and you need one language that everyone understands and one culture with values that people understand. As small groups, everyone can maintain their own culture in private, but in the public space, you must have homogeneity, especially when you're protecting your country. And this obscenity of just opening the borders is especially since I know, because we experienced it three or four different times going over the border from Mexico or when we lived in the U.S. or in Canada. And then when I went over with my husband, I had to provide all kinds of documents to prove that I was entitled to enter the U.S. in 78, I believe, when we went back up to the Upper Peninsula, the UP. Which was wonderful, by the way. That's a state that people don't recognize. It was a beautiful state. But anyway, that concept of regulating who comes into your community, and they've got to be integrated bit by bit so that they can be integrated. You cannot be overwhelmed by a chaotic group of people. And that's exactly what they're doing. That is the first ingredient to divide and conquer. You create a bunch of different groups that are often at odds and even have blood feuds with one another back in their homelands, and you bring them here together. You ensure that there's a shortage of food and fuel and other necessities, and they're bound to start fighting with each other, if only initially just to get hold of the fuel that the other person has or the food the other person has. And then it proceeds from there. And then you've got the divide and conquer wars that debilitate the people and prevent them from protecting themselves. That is the whole idea of the open borders. It has nothing to do with humanitarian concerns. Oh, it's good for our economy. It's only good for our economy when you integrate people that bring a desirable and needed skill to the economy to which you are admitting them. And you also ensure that they are healthy before they enter the country, not after they enter the country and infect other people with contagious diseases and then overwhelm and destroy the healthcare system, whether it's private or public. But it's even more vulnerable when it's a public institution because the government has the monopoly and it can dish out the health services to their advantage the way they wish. And a lot of the upper class people here in Canada now are using the publicly funded healthcare system while the people it was intended for can't get in, can't get the access to it. Immigration is crucial. It's got to be monitored.
Let me share this magnificent letter from Archbishop Vigano, an open letter to American Catholics on the eve of the election. Dear faithful American Catholics, I'm addressing all of you a few days before the presidential election that will call millions of American citizens to the polls. Even in conditions of relative normality, the exercise of the vote is your moral duty, through which you cooperate in the first person in choosing the person who will lead the nation for the next 4 years. But in this coming electoral round, just as in 2020, and indeed much more so, you are not simply called to choose between two candidates who happen to be on different political sides, but who nevertheless have this common good at heart in compliance with the Constitution and the law. No. In this election, you must choose between two radically opposed ways of conceiving the government of your nation. You are called to choose between democracy and dictatorship, between freedom and slavery. On the one side, we have candidate Donald J. Trump, who, despite serious problems in his positions, especially in the matter of abortion and assisted procreation, has as his objective the common good and the protection of the fundamental freedoms of citizens. In Donald Trump's America, every Catholic can practice their faith and educate their children in it without interference from the state. On the other side, we have a candidate in a party that promotes everything that directly opposes the faith and morals of the Catholic Church. In Kamala Harris's America, Catholics, but also Protestants, are considered fundamentalists, to be marginalized and eliminated, and their children are considered the property of the state, which arrogates to itself the right to lead them astray from an early age in both body and soul. Trump's America can become great and prosperous again. Harris's America is destined for invasion and for moral, social, and economic destruction. The most ferocious dictatorship. Look at your country. Your cities have become dumps filled with derelicts and criminals, drug dealers and addicts, prostitutes and robbers. Your schools are dens of indoctrination and corruption from kindergarten onwards. In your courts, criminals are acquitted and innocents are imprisoned. New ideological crimes are prosecuted, while illegality is tolerated and encouraged. In your hospitals, multinational corporations rule, and you are their guinea pigs to be exterminated or made chronically ill, so you will be their perpetual clients. Farmers, ranchers, fishermen are persecuted, forced to fail, while their land is grabbed by unscrupulous corporations who will transform it into endless photovoltaic systems and wind turbines to power their data centers and server farms, where they collect all your data, your movement, your purchases, and your political preferences. They have gone so far as to tamper with the climate by means of sophisticated geoengineering operations and devastating arson in order to make the global warming fraud credible and impose the green transition, the increase in the cost of energy and electric cars and scooters. And all this is done based on evidence that consists of lies without any scientific proof, but which are propagated through the servile collaboration of the regime media, ever ready to label any dissenters as conspiracy theorists. But what until yesterday was dismissed as a result of conspiracy theories is now admitted by the government itself. They take away your sunlight. They poison you by seeding the clouds. They overwhelm your villages and your fields with deadly hurricanes. They kill your livestock and dry up your crops with induced droughts and devastating fires. They aim to control the entire food sector, to force you to eat only what they make available to you. This is what the Agenda 2030 calls for, which has been imposed without any vote by the United Nations and the World Economic Forum. In these four disastrous years of the Biden-Harris administration, we have had a puppet in the White House and a corrupt and incompetent vice president who has never stopped lying and deceiving voters about her past and her future. Power is managed by the criminal deep state, whose names and faces we now know, that is responsible for the destruction of your great nation. And to ensure that the crisis is endless, new war scenarios are continually opening up in conflicts no one actually wants, except for those that make enormous profits from them, sacrificing human lives and compromising international stability. It goes on, Layla, but is this not magnificent?
It's overdue. Yes, it's magnificent, but it's overdue. It's fortunately, at least someone is speaking out, and hopefully there are still enough faithful that they will take heed of his advice. It's so tragic that we need to be reminded. I mean, the whole concept of religion was that ideas were introduced to us through different prophets at different times. The very first monotheist was a Persian, Zarathustra. He was either a Persian or a Bactrian. I'm not sure which. Bactria would be modern-day Afghanistan, I believe. But I believe it was actually from the royal family, one of the royal families of the Persians. And then we had other prophets. We had all the prophets that are worshipped by the true Judaism, the original Judaism, and then Christianity and Islam, who then incorporated all of them because Prophet Muhammad recognized that all of those prophets were sent by God and that they were bringing incremental messages depending on the needs of the time. And now we're at a time where we must accept that there is a being greater than us. You don't have to be a believer in this anthropomorphic God that they've created who talks our language and does silly things like, go kill this guy and go kill that nation and wipe out that old people. What kind of God can possibly say, I have created human beings and I want you human beings to go and wipe out Amalek and every other living creature? That is so an obscenity to even recommend it, to even speak it. But anyway, first, one thing I haven't yet explained is why am I using a phone and not a microphone? I'm sure the audio quality is uneven. I wanted to escape the electrical prison. I got rid of my Wi-Fi, got rid of my microphone, cameras and everything, and just wanted to use bare basics for the necessities. Unfortunately, Gaza erupted. I found that I needed. But anyway, I hope the audio is even enough on the phone.
Layla, it's been excellent. Excellent. No one would have noticed, right, but for your mentioning it. We can't assume they're going to take this line down. Early voter report, rigged machines flipping Trump votes to Kamala. Voters in Tarrant County, Texas, the third most populous in the state, are reporting the voting machines are flipping their votes. Residents of the county, including the city of Fort Worth, urging people to check their printed ballots before submitting them. Many are casting their votes for Trump, are reporting their votes are being automatically converted in favor of Harris when the ballots are printed. In other words, the highly flawed electronic machines are once again having major issues which benefit the Democrat Party, nearly identical to what happened back in 2020. We've now seen reports of blips like this in Tennessee, Georgia, Texas. Who knows where else it's happening and not being reported? And isn't it convenient that whenever errors like this happen, they always go in favor of the Democrats? If this sort of thing is already happening in early voting, just imagine the stunts are going to pull on Election Day when the vast majority of Republican voting takes place. At this point, the only thing we can do is be vigilant and double-check our ballots to make sure they're right, because we know the Democrats are going to try whatever it takes to stay in power. Here we have a voter in Texas talking about what's going on.
James Carpenter, I just voted in the White Settlement election. I voted for one president, checked it on the video screen. When I got the paper ballot, it had the other candidate's name on it. Check your paper ballots, everybody.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Lucas Clark, and I voted here at White Settlement Library in Fort Worth. I was in line for about 45 minutes, and there were two people that came out and said that their ballots were changed. So everybody check your, double check and print it out ballots.
Layla, I don't know if you're aware, but the insider for the World Economic Forum said they prepared 30 million ballots to dump on November 5th. It's just
Why
shocking.
Why am I not surprised? It's disgusting. Yeah. It's not just shocking. It's an utter abrogation of everything that all democratic, free-loving countries have always represented or stood for or claimed and believed to be a representative of. This whole thing, you don't even have to call yourself a democracy or a republic or whatever. If you have respect for your people and their ability to make their own decisions, once they are correctly informed, that's the reason I went into TV news to begin with. I knew TV was now the medium that people were watching at the time that I went into it in the 70s. And I knew that no country can ever have free citizens unless they are well informed. Jim, I have to tell you, this last weekend, these past couple days, were utterly devastating for me. 20 years ago, I had worked together with a bunch of people to try and elect an ethical bunch of candidates in my region in order to elect a decent federal government. All of those I contacted were like, don't bother, it's not worth it.
Layla, we'll pick it up on the other side. Meanwhile, I'm going to open the phone line. I've opened the call line, 608-957-8727. If you'd like to speak to Layla, Paul, and me about any of these issues or others on your mind, 608-957-8727. Layla, you're talking about what, political developments in Canada, I take it.
Actually, in my community, there were some people that I had worked with about 20 years ago to, I think it was in 2004, actually, exactly 20 years ago, for a federal election. We wanted to try and elect people locally who were sympathetic with the realities around the world, and particularly in Palestine and also in Lebanon. This time when I approached them over the weekend, I hadn't spoken to them in decades because they had driven me out, probably because I'm a Christian, some of them. And also I heard them complain because I was speaking in English. I was not very pleased with that. But those were not the ones I approached. It was the ones that had been interested in getting out an alternate newsletter to all the people that were relevant. But they, this time, don't bother me. We don't want to know. I don't really care. I said, you're not paying attention. The rest of the world now knows the truth. You don't have to struggle to overcome falsehoods in order to replace it with truths. Oh, we don't want to know. Don't worry about it. Leave it. So I thought, that's it. I'll leave them alone. Let the rest of the world save their people because they don't care about their own relatives. Did I hear another voice?
Yes, we've been joined by a caller. I believe it would be Brian. Join the conversation, Brian.
On Henry Macau yesterday, they had a little story on the BRICS Kazan declaration that was on the Kremlin's website. And there were 8 points And can I read them real quick?
Yeah, take
you
your time.
Won't be happy.
Don't read them too fast so we can think about them. Okay. Go ahead.
Supports leading role of IMF in global finance. That's number one. Number two, support UN Agenda 2030 for sustainable development.
That's number three. This has got to be fake.
You can go to the Kremlin website. Let me just finish them because it's at least food for thought. Okay. Support public-private partnerships to attain sustainable development.
No.
Support reduction and removal of greenhouse gases. Support creation of carbon markets. I know, I've reacted the same way.
Support
the WHO doing, with the central coordinating the role and strengthening international pandemic prevention. Support creation of vaccines, and eight, support 5G and digital whatever. So that was
propaganda.
The 8 points.
This is fake, put up there on the website somehow, but it's all phony. It's completely inconsistent.
It's hard to say because Henry Macau normally has been very reliable over the years. And I think the caller, Bruce, is it? It's wise for us to look at it and keep an open mind.
I agree.
By the way, about the WHO, the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus was an Ethiopian Marxist who belonged to a Marxist party. He was the head of the health ministry, and he refused to declare cholera and called it simply watery diarrhea. So people from the tribes he did not belong to who were infected with it ended up dying. The professionals from those three tribes at the time that the WHO committee was looking for a new leader of WHO, the professionals had written letters to the committee begging them not to appoint Tedros Ghebreyesus because he was so corrupt. Furthermore, in Canada, the federal health minister was Theresa Tam, I believe is her first name is Theresa Tam, T-A-M. She was still a member of the Chinese Communist Party, and she was still an advisor to the WHO and very good friends with the Ghebreyesus. So the WHO was utterly corrupt. They were part of the plan, I believe, to spread this false fear and to make idiots of us walking around with diapers on our faces. I still look at those. Now, I admit that I sometimes, if I'm going into a crowded group of people, I will wear a mask because bacteria are large enough that they can penetrate the holes in the they cannot penetrate the holes in the mask. And there are so many people who have sneaked into the country with things like bacterial pneumonia, tuberculosis, and who knows what other contagious diseases they're bringing into the country to make us sick and kill us off. So I will, if going into a crowded group, will still wear a mask. Otherwise, to breathe free as God has intended for us, to breathe the clean, fresh air that he created in this wonderful world that has been polluted by the monsters. Where they came from, I don't want to speculate out loud.
Brian.
Thank you for your information, Bruce. That is definitely worth considering. I mean,
Brian,
it may not be true, but
the reason I was concerned is Elvira Nabalia, who was the head of the Central Bank of Russia, a little Jewish girl, not very attractive. She is a World Economic Forum young global leader, okay? And that is never good.
Agreed. So, it is. Yeah, I think, Jim, you'd agree that is not
Of course.
Plus, what people don't realize is during the Soviet Union, okay, the Rothschilds printed the money for the Bolshevik Soviet Union. The red star that you associate with Bolshevism is actually a symbol of the five of Mayor Ansel Rothschild. Okay.
That may be true, but forgive me if I interrupt for a moment. The star that you see that is called the Star of David, it is not mentioned anywhere in the Old Testament and certainly not in the New Testament, but it is one of the many geometric symbols that Muslims use throughout their entire history. It is actually, in fact, there's a replica of it, of a wood carving with the six-pointed star that was created by, used by Muslims in their geometric artwork because they were prohibited from trying to make icons or idols of God. So they used to use geometric, beautiful geometric symbols. And that six-pointed star is a Muslim star.
No, the red star for the Bolsheviks is a five-pointed star.
The five-star. I'm sorry.
Right. Red, yeah. And it stands for the five sons of Mayor Ansel Rothschild, who is an antichrist. Okay.
Agreed.
So anyway, yeah. So I download this information from higher self. There's three chakras above your seven chakras. And Christ was teaching how to download information from it. And I've been doing it for 10 years, and I get all this information. And at first, it just didn't make sense. But the last few days, a lot of it I've been finding is spot on through like Edgar Cayce and even Jordan Maxwell. Jordan Maxwell had a lot of videos on his deep dig into the Bible. And he showed a lot of stuff that I get when I do these downloads. And it was just amazing that everything I get is spot on because your three chakras above your seven chakras. I'm sorry. When I start doing soul stuff, I get like this. But it's totally pure. You're getting pure information. So I'm sorry. Anyway,
don't apologize. You care. You care about humanity. You care about God's creatures, and that's what's important. And so do not apologize for that. And you're absolutely right. The Rothschilds were so corrupt. In fact, do you know that the Rothschilds were forced to practice endogamy? Every man, in order to work in the Rothschild family business, every man had to marry the daughter of his brother. He had to marry his first cousin. In one case, one of them even married his niece. That is how they were.
Yeah.
Just to keep the money in the Rothschild hands, to prevent it from getting into anyone, to prevent anyone else from learning their tricks and their cheating and their devious methods.
Yeah. It's Shabbat and Frankism. That's typical because Shabbat and Frankists sleep with their daughters. You know, they're sleeping with their kids. They're just
Chabad.
Horrible. And they were Shabbat and Frankists.
Yeah, you're talking about Chabad Lubavitch. And that was started first in Russia. They were thrown by, believe it or not, the Bolsheviks put them on trial and threw them out of Russia. The Bolsheviks, who were Jews. But they threw out the Chabad. They went to Poland. And then from Poland, they came to New York and set up headquarters in New York. So that even from within Judaism, they were able to pervert Judaism. That is how Judaism got perverted into Zionism. And there are some good rabbis who still demand that we recognize that there is a pure Judaism that is not polluted by Zionism, and that Zionism is not Judaism. Zionism is a political military movement with a global ambition, whereas Judaism is a religion that is built upon, that was one of the foundation stones of the rest of our religions.
Gandhi reputedly reported that he had surveyed all the religions of the world, and the only one that had no redeeming merit whatsoever was Judaism.
And do you know why Mahatma Gandhi was murdered? He was murdered by a Hindu because Mahatma Gandhi was teaching peace between the Muslims and the Hindus. Even today now, it's under Narendra Modi in India. He has encouraged hostility and attacks by Hindus against the Muslims. And that's at the behest of Netanyahu. Everywhere Netanyahu has been able to influence evil Zionists, they have tried to create hostility towards Muslims. They have ridiculed them, and they have infiltrated Muslim groups. I still believe that a lot of the so-called riots or problems created by Muslims were actually instigated, because they did that in Palestine. Once they had forced with bombs that were planted in Jewish areas in amongst the Arab Jews, they fled because they didn't want to go to Israel once it was created. They knew it was illegitimate and a violation of their religion. So the underground Zionists planted bombs in Jewish locations in the Arab countries, and those Jews then fled. When they arrived in Israel, they were put in barbed wire fences, sprayed with DDT because they were considered inferior, even though they were extremely well-educated. And then they would use the threats, the bribery, the same things they did to Muslim Arabs and Christian Arabs. They did that with the Arab Jews in order to get them to go into Arab towns and villages and plant things like salmonella, typhus, and other diseases and smallpox. And in fact, there are affidavits that were signed by them after the fact. But of course, only a very few determined people got hold of those affidavits. I no longer have the copies of them. But Vanunu did write an affidavit, by the way, about the Dimona nuclear plant. And of course, he was tricked into being captured, kidnapped, and taken hostage. No, taken prisoner. God knows what they did to him in prison. Anyway, I'm sorry, Bruce. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Brian, that's okay.
Brian, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's okay. I've composed myself now.
Thank you for that wonderful, that important information. I mean, it's possible that Jim is right, that the website was hacked, but it's something we need to consider.
To me, I haven't seen any evidence that all these BRICS nations have gotten rid of their Rothschild bankers. Okay. They're still there. They haven't gone anywhere. Right. And if you look at Mayor Ansel Rothschild's wife from way back when, she said, my sons, if they want war, there will be war. If they want peace, there will be peace. And so the Rothschilds, it's like they're playing a shell game. You know, okay, yeah, we were part of this Western financial system, but now we're going to sneak it over in this BRICS thing, and the people won't be aware, and they'll think we're great. And then eventually we'll get it just as corrupt and screwed up as what we did with the other financial system. It's just how they work. So my only hope is that Putin is like a John F. Kennedy, that he rebels from within. And I've already seen some evidence of that, because you remember that Denis Prosygin, who was that guy that owned the Wagner Group in Russia, okay? He was a Shabbat Lubavitch person, and Zelensky is also Shabbat Lubavitch. Well, what they were doing, and this was on Ben Fulford, and it was actually in the Washington Post briefly, and Fulford got it and published it. They had a thing worked out between them where Prosygin would get information from Zelensky during the Battle of Bakhmut, where all these poor Ukrainians were going to be bivouacked. And then with that information, Prochigin would, hit them with artillery and kill them all. That's why during the Battle of Bakhmut, the life expectancy of a Ukrainian soldier in Bakhmut was 4 hours. And then Zelensky would give part of his Western money to Prochigin to put in his bank accounts. Okay, well, then what happened, there were people of the light in the Russian military. They started cutting off his artillery shells. So then Prochigin was bitching about not getting artillery shells. So finally, when he was flying to, where was it? I think Belarus, in his little private jet with his other henchmen, someone planted a bomb in the plane and blew him up. Okay. And so that had to be people of the light that are in the Russian Federation. And what we have to hope is that they're, you know, that they're there and they're going to correct all this. In fact, that's why Prochigin had that big thing where he advanced on Moscow. He took his troops and he was driving to Moscow and going to start riots and overthrow Putin. And if you read Rabbi Shabbat and Zvi, his little speech in 1994, it all just fits, because he said in that speech, we can't trust the Russians, we can't trust the Ukrainians, they're Amalek, they're Aryans, we can't convert them, we have to kill them, we have to kill all of them. And basically, that's what they're doing in Ukraine. They're carrying out the Shabbat plan. And it's right there. You can go to Henry Macau and bring up, you know, that speech, and it's right there. And everything that's talked about in that speech from 1994, it's flying out right now.
Brian,
yeah.
I want to get clear on this. You're saying Zelensky was working to kill Ukrainians. Was it because they were Christians? Was this to deplete Ukraine of Christians so it could become the new Israel?
Aryans. Whatever Aryans, Amalek, you know, that's what Menachem Schnendel, Mendelssohn, Schneerson, that's what he wanted. Okay. And it's in that speech. And see, you're an Aryan, I'm an Aryan, we're all Aryans, and we're their enemy. And so any way to kill them, that's what they're doing. And then I even saw a post today where they were talking about, the demographics have collapsed here in Ukraine. The only way we can salvage the situation is immigrants. Well, those immigrants will be the enemies of the Aryans, the Jews.
Israeli
the Jews will
Jews.
Be there. That's their homeland. That's where they're from.
That's what they claim, Khazaria, their home. That's where the Eastern European Jews are from, yes. Now, the interesting thing is, I've mentioned this to a number of other people, look for a video of a press conference between Netanyahu and Zelensky in 2019 after Zelensky was supposedly elected from a comedian, from a nobody comedian, to the president of Ukraine. Look for that video, because you will hear Netanyahu saying to Zelensky, our people, this is another of one of our country for our people, the Jews. This Ukraine was our country, just like Israel is our country. And we will build it up again. And Zaev Jabotinsky, his real name was Vladimir Jabotinsky, but Zaev was his nickname. Zaev Jabotinsky, who said you have to kill all of the Arabs because they will never submit to domination by us, and we will take over our country. And my father, Netanyahu, said, was his editor. And so he went on and on. And I thought, oh my God, can people not see that these two have something planned? There is a link The reason, a lot of the Jews that were in Ukraine were sent over to Israel just before the fighting started, because they knew what they had planned. And it's just so obvious. They have always done this. They have planted people. There's another one who was a Russian, not a Ukrainian, but a Russian, very close. And remember, Moscow started, actually Russia started in Kiev. But anyway, he actually was involved in the whole concept of making Russia an Orthodox country was begun because of their relationship from Ukraine, from the Crimea, to the Byzantine Empire. It was the Byzantines that sent over two monks to create the Cyrillic alphabet, and they then wrote the Bible in Cyrillic for the people, for the Russian Orthodox. And they, and that's why a lot of their buildings are like the, built with the domes, like the Byzantine churches had been built. And in, for a long time, they even called Moscow the Third Rome, because it looked so beautiful architecturally. It was one of the most beautiful cities in Europe. But as for another one of the great leaders who recognized the danger to their to his country, and that was Count N.P. Nikolai Paul Ignatieff. He was the interior minister, and he advised, the Tsar asked him, why are there so many pogroms against the Jews? And Ignatieff did an investigation, and he said they seem to be charging exorbitant usury for loans to the poor people, and for all the necessities of life, they overcharge them for everything that they need. So they end up borrowing and cannot pay it back. And that is why those pogroms are occurring. So it was Ignatieff who instituted what is called the May Laws, M-A-Y, May 15, the laws of May 15, and also the Pale of Settlement. They were forbidden from living amongst the peasant Russians who could not afford the exorbitant, because they get hold of the money, they buy the, they are able to then acquire all of the materials that are the necessities of life. They did that in Russia. And so they left there, and Ignatieff said to them, you are not loyal Russians, you are internationalists, because it was called the Israel Alliance, the Israel International Alliance. And there were numerous other similar organizations where they planted Jews all over the world, in South America, the major cities, as well as obviously in North America, obviously in Europe, and then all over, so that they, when the time came, they could then move their way up. They would have, they would be supplied with the money. That's why Jacob Schiff was one of many who came, he came to North America, the Warburgs, whatever. They brought money from the Rothschilds, and others similar to that went to other countries and took money to the Zionist communities so that they could work their way up through the system and buy those who were the decision makers and control the governments of each country. Sorry, it's been going on for centuries.
They did the same thing in Poland. They did the same thing in Spain. Exactly. And Jacob Schiff, he brought the Jews in from Galveston, Texas. They had a huge influx of those people into Galveston. So anyway. Yep.
Ryan, great call. Layla, just wonderful to have you here. I look forward to your return engagement. Thank you both so much.
Yeah, thank you for your courage. Thank you, Brian.